Hi, welcome to another edition of Bringing Hope to Alzheimer's. I'm Ann Frazier, and I'm sitting here with my new friend. This is Paula Kopp, and Paula is a registered nurse, and she is passionate about working with older adults, and you have over 35 years of experience in clinical and leadership roles, and currently serving as a nurse navigator, community liaison for John Knox Village East, Meyer Care Center in Higginsville, Missouri. Did I get all that right?
You did. Good job.
That was a mouthful. Yeah. Okay, wonderful. Well, I thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we got to have a great conversation in the hallway, which was wonderful. I got to know you better, so yeah. Thank you for that. Tell me a little bit about how did you hear about Night of Hope, and why did you want to be on the podcast?
About a year ago, a healthcare partner addressed me about coming to the gala, and I unfortunately wasn't able to attend. However, I am looking forward to participating moving forward. So,
wonderful.
That being said,
So you're coming this year?
Well, I would love to, yeah.
Good. Excellent. Yeah. June 8th.
Okay.
There you go. All right. Share with our listeners a little bit more about John Knox Village East and being your role as a nurse navigator and community liaison. What does all of that entail?
Well, I'll start with the John Knox Village East Meyer Care Center piece. John Knox Village East and Meyer Care Center has been around the Higginsville community since the 1960s. George and Hilda Meyer were farmers in our area. They donated their land for a nursing home, quote unquote, to be built on that land. It started, I believe, as a 30-bed care community and has expanded tremendously. The John Knox Village East independent living apartments were built in the 70s, and it's continued to increase in size and value since then. Our most recent addition to the care community has been a rehab unit with 16 private suites that are really beautiful, and our therapy team does a great job with our rehab patients as well. As far as my role there, the community liaison role was established about 6 years ago. And the reason for that was to mainstream that admission process and also get a person out and marketing and meeting and networking with care partners in our area. So we've grown since that time. We now have added a staff member who's the admissions coordinator. Her name is Erin. So some people may have worked with her. Additionally, my role now is more in that networking piece and participating in professionals in aging groups, et cetera. I do help facilitate the Johnson County Professionals in Aging, as well as the Lafayette County Professionals in Aging group, and then Chambers, Lions Club, things like that.
You're a busy girl.
I am a busy girl, but it's so much fun. I get to go out and make friends every day. So it's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
That is a wonderful thing. So what got you interested in older adults and specifically Alzheimer's and memory care?
Okay. So when I was born, I was the youngest grandchild on my dad's side. My grandmother was 66 years old when I was born. So I loved spending time with her as a little girl. And then as I became, I would say about 10 years old, my great-grandmother moved closer to be closer to her kids. And I had a great-uncle, and my great-grandmother and great-uncle both resided at Meyer Care Center. So we had to do the weekly visits, you know. And my great-grandmother had cognitive deficits, and that wasn't real exciting for a 10-year-old, right? And so I would wander down the hall to my great-uncle's room, and we would watch Royals and Chiefs, and he was a great storyteller, and he told great jokes, and so the nursing staff had an affinity to be in his room. And so I really believe that exposure kind of led me to my interest in the senior population and serving that population as well.
Very good. It is a great population.
It is. It is. They have so much to teach and share.
Absolutely. The stories are phenomenal.
They are. I could write a book. I should.
And you should.
I should.
Absolutely. So the landscape of aging services has changed, but I also want to touch on the fact that you're in a rural community.
Right.
And so you're from Higginsville.
Correct.
And that's about an hour from Kansas City. So there's lots of little communities around there. Let's talk a little bit about that and also how the aging services have changed and what that means in the rural setting.
Okay. So I would say the biggest change that has transpired has to do with coping skills with families. I think there are lots of things, and I think this is universal. I don't think this is isolated to the rural community. I think we're also seeing that in metropolitan areas. I think it's a huge challenge. I think we have generations of people who aren't prepared to cope with loss. I think we have folks who don't don't understand life cycles as perhaps we once did. And I think healthcare relied on that understanding of the life cycle historically. That being said, I think we also have a mental health crisis on our hands. I've seen a big change in mental health accessibility, if you will, and it's not great in the metropolitan area, and it's even worse in the rural community. There aren't enough beds for treatment. Geri-psych, which is geriatric psychiatric care, is really hard to come by in the metropolitan area as well as in our region, as well as counseling service. Just basic counseling services are really hard to come by as well. Those dealing with cognitive impairment obviously could benefit from those services. You know, symptom management, as well as, families who are trying to deal with and cope with their loved one who is declining in their abilities, and those challenges that are associated with trying to get them to maintain their independence, but also preserving their safety. Mm-hmm. You know, that can be very challenging. And in the rural community, let me back up. In the metropolitan community, you have neighbors who are really close. In our area, we have small towns where there are neighbors, but so many people live in the country, they're removed in that rural community, and their closest neighbor may be a mile away, and that makes that safety piece very difficult.
So let's go back to then, as far as even here, like when we were just chatting in the hallway, it's hard for a lot of people don't know. Even a lot of doctors don't know that there's something that you can do for potential reversal, like myself.
Right.
So I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that I would assume that doctors in rural communities as well, that they're the word that you could potentially reverse early stage or pre-Alzheimer's, is that something you've heard before?
I have heard that because I'm a healthcare professional, but also my mom had Alzheimer's. So yes, I'm familiar with that. However, I would agree with you that there are a lot of people in our community that are not aware of that. Neurological care, specifically to the aging brain, most people rely on their primary care physician or nurse practitioner to provide those services for them in our community. If they are to be seen by a neurologist, most of that is at a local rural hospital. The neurologist comes out of the metropolitan area once a week and sees their person in that clinic setting. If they choose to go to a brain health clinic, like at KU or St. Luke's, that's an hour drive. So, transportation can be a barrier. The expense can be a barrier. There are just lots of things that, impede accessibility to care. So as far as functional medicine and kind of what you do to reverse the signs and symptoms of Alzheimer's or cognitive deficit, that's a new concept to many people in our area.
Right. And you guys have, we talked about this before as well, but you guys have a farmer's market, and you've got some access to some of the organic, so to speak, vegetables and so forth. Because really that's what a bulk share of my meals are.
Sure.
I do have protein, but the meals that I make at home are almost all vegetables with a little bit of protein. So that is doable in a rural community, where you can grow your own food or get them from local farmers, which is really great.
Yeah, absolutely. Historically, in the rural community, most people had gardens, right? That was a big deal. Most of the farmers' wives, probably until the 1980s, I would say, were canning their fresh fruits and vegetables. We've kind of gotten away from that. There are some that still do that, but for the majority, I would say, things are bought at the farmer's market or at the local grocery store. So that accessibility is probably a 50-50 shot.
How can we, as Knight of Hope, and knowing what our mission statement is, how can we help in the rural communities? What services could we help provide?
I think education would be key. Mm-hmm. I think getting in front of people and sharing your mission would be instrumental. I think that we are a medication-driven society. Probably in the 1970s, antibiotics were a big thing, and that's when they're prescribing of medications. I can fix your problem today. I'm going to write you a script. Here you go. Send you home with a pill. And people felt like that was the answer. So that has become the expectation. And so I feel like reversing that is doable, but is complicated and difficult. So I think education is key.
Good.
Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power. I always say it's simple, but it's not easy.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
But there's lots of great things, you know, between sleep, food we eat, exercise. There's so many things that don't have to cost a lot of money to be able to do that can help your brain. As a nurse, what are you seeing as far as the landscape of, like, you started working hard in this field and envisioning on the horizon after 35 years, what do you see coming up? What do you see the changes that would help in the rural setting?
Well, this is my pie in the sky answer.
Okay.
So one of the big changes in healthcare in the last 35 years has been insurance and reimbursement. I feel like that also is a barrier to care sometimes, right? The managed care policies did not exist when I got into healthcare. And while they are there's a great number of them now, I'm not sure that it's the same quality of care encouraged as like a Medicare plan. We see a big difference between Medicare and managed care. I also think that the quality of the long-term care insurance plan has changed. You know, assisted living is a big component of that. Well, for example, when my mom's policy went into effect, it paid for one full bed. So she was able to have a private room, which was great for a person who had cognitive deficit. However, now, you know, they're only paying a percentage. So it makes, there's still a burden, right, on the family or on their financial resources, their savings. I also think that as a society, we're seeing a generation that hasn't saved for retirement. People are getting sicker younger. They're not working as long. And I think that is compromising as well, you know, and that's not just in the rural community. That's the society at large.
Absolutely it is. Yeah. So it's important for people of all ages to consider adopting healthy lifestyle, right? Mm-hmm. But and behaviors and the quality of life. But what recommendations do you have for, and again, I hate to always like point out rural communities, but I told you the story about a person I know mm-hmm. that is having difficulty because they just don't have the funds, nor do they have access to some of the things they may need in a rural community. So as far as recommendations you have for, and this could go for all people, but specifically in rural communities, what recommendations do you have for the healthier lifestyle?
Keep moving. That is the biggest thing. That's the biggest component. And it's not just physical exercise. It's mental exercise. It's exercising the brain. So whether it's the games on your phone or putting together a jigsaw puzzle or working the crossword puzzle in the New York Times or whatever that looks like, the Kansas City Star, whatever it looks like, just keep active and keep moving. And of course, the healthy diet is really important as well. You know, the fruits, the vegetables, fish and the omegas and getting those in. All of that is really important to maintaining health for as long as possible. I did not share with you that my granny, who was 66 when I was born, she lived to be 109 years old. And yeah, and so, you know, I watched her and she actually was a lady ahead of her time. She didn't drink soda. She didn't drink alcohol. Snacks for her were celery and carrots cut up in the refrigerator. And when she wanted a snack, she would open it and take something out and chomp on it a little bit. But that being said, she walked. She never drove a car. So she walked 3 miles every day. She went to the post office, the grocery store, and back home. In the winter, she got out unless there was too much snow or ice. And I think that her longevity was a direct reflection on her nutrition and on her activity.
That is exactly what it's about.
Right.
It's all the things that our parents and grandparents taught us, which is, you know, get good sleep and exercise and eat your fruits and vegetables.
Yes, absolutely.
And brush your teeth and floss your teeth. I mean, all of these things are but really, like I said, it's simple, but it's not easy because there's so many things in our life and our society that can detour us from that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to return back to the podcast in just a moment. But we wanted to do a quick infomercial and we wanted to tell you that we are looking for sponsors for our podcast. So if you or anyone you know have been affected by Alzheimer's and you're loving our podcast, then we would absolutely love to talk to you. You know, we are not only, we're based here out of Kansas City, but we have listeners all over the United States. And in fact, all over the world, which is really fun and exciting to see where people tune in from. So France, Australia, all kinds of different places. And that's really, really cool to see our reach go so far. And we are hoping to take our podcast to 2 days a week. So in order to do that, we are looking for some podcast sponsors. So if you or anyone you know would love to have an infomercial about your wonderful company, we would love to spotlight you. And so please reach out to us and email us at info@thenightofhope.com, and we will reach out to you and we can talk about all the different levels that we have. You can sponsor for 1 month, 3 months, or a year. We'd love to talk to you about that. So thanks so much. And again, reach out to us by emailing us at info@thenightofhope.com. Thanks so much. Now we'll return back to the podcast. Okay, so anyone interested in learning more about aging services and so forth, if you're in a rural community and you don't have access to come to the city as often, what would people look up? What services would somebody look up to maybe get some information or some help?
Sure. So I think, you know, I always defer to their PCP. So if they, you know, contact their medical provider, see if there are resources there. Perhaps home health could be beneficial for that person. We're very fortunate that we have a senior center that provides programs often, right, about different health entities that could come into the home or things like that. And they also deliver nutritious meals. So they will, you know, bring those to the door if that's needed. Another thing that is really beneficial is, you know, they can call us at John Knox Village East and Meyer Care. Whether they choose us or not, I will always help. You know, I've been in those shoes with both of my parents, and, you know, it's not an easy thing. It's very overwhelming. And so sometimes it's just nice to have somebody help you troubleshoot over the phone, answer questions. And if they don't choose us, that's fine, as long as they get the care they need and the support they need for their loved one.
So, and that's the right attitude.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So in your senior center, if you need someone to come and speak and talk about mm-hmm. some of the things that we've been able to do, that I've been able to do in my life, and the information that we share through mm-hmm. Night of Hope, then we could maybe do that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
See, I would love that. See, we'll book it. All right, y'all heard that. Okay, what else? Is there anything else that we didn't cover today that you would like to share?
One other thing I would like to talk about is MC5, which is a movement in Missouri. I sit on the board for MC5, and one of the things that we're passionate about is culture change in the senior population. You know, that people are allowed to maintain their independence as long as possible and their dignity, as well as who they are as a person. You know, you can take my sister and myself, for example, and put us in a care community, and my sister and I dress very differently. If you put me in her yoga pants and whatever, I would not be happy, and vice versa, you know? So facilitating that, as well as when a person gets out of bed in the morning. You know, are you an early morning person?
Yes, I am.
I am not. Do not wake me at 5, and do not be pushing pills in my face when you do it, you know? So part of that movement is to allow people to maintain their lifestyle that they previously had in their homes in a care community. That being said, we are reintegrating MC5 post-COVID, kind of revamping it. We had a webinar last month on validation therapy, which has to do with communication for those who are cognitively impaired. And then we have some other webinars coming up. We will be having a seminar in the fall. So please watch for that. These education pieces are really important for the staff and long-term care, assisted living, or those who are caring for folks in their home. You know, it's helpful information to everyone. And so we want people to know that we're back and that information is accessible.
That's okay. Awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that that's something that the state is doing to help out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good.
Does Kansas have a program like that? Do you know?
I don't know that.
I just happened to think of that. I'm sorry.
No, I'm glad. No, I'm glad. We'll have to look into that. Yeah. I think that's really good, though.
Yeah. Thanks.
Very nice. Okay. Well, thank you. Anything else?
No.
Okay.
No,
I just want to make sure that thank you so much for being here and for all that information. And one of the things that we've talked about is the rural community being able to get our message out and really try to give that hope that, you know, there is no cure. And there's a lot of things people can do, though, to make their brain better. And I think that in and of itself, and that there is a potential of reversal if it's caught early, I think that is so hopeful. And that's kind of what we would like to make sure that that message gets out so people know that there is something that they can do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hope is the word, right?
Hope is the word. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I want to thank you so much for having me today. It's been a pleasure. I very much enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it was a pleasure to meet you. Yes. And we will talk to you all soon on our next episode of Bringing Hope to Alzheimer's. Thanks so much.